Welcome to the Pre-Post Film Review. I'm John Asquith.
And I'm Matt Stevenson. So the way things work here at Pre-Post is that we're going to talk about a film over two distinct periods. First, you'll hear us chat about the trailer to a film. This episode is the new Blade Runner 2049. So that first part of the episode is going to be completely spoiler-free. You can listen to that before you've seen the film if you like. But then we're going to jump forward in time to when John and myself have actually watched the film, and we're going to do a full review, and this part of the podcast will be chock full of spoilers, so don't listen to the second part until you've watched the film itself. So here are our trailer thoughts for the new Blade Runner.
Every civilization was built off the back of a disposable workforce. But I can only make so many. Shh. Happy birthday.
There is an order to things.
That's what we do here. We keep order.
The world is built on a wall that separates kind. Tell either side there's no wall, you bought a war.
Okay, so we've just watched the teaser trailer for Blade Runner 2049. Mm-hmm. That very specific year, 2049. And we sort of made a point of watching the teaser trailer, Matt, because it's relatively short and doesn't reveal too much. Which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your thoughts after seeing this short teaser trailer?
I'm really excited for this, John. I don't necessarily think that's just because of the Blade Runner name, even though I really love the original Blade Runner, and I don't necessarily think it doesn't need a sequel. Like, it's kind of sort of loose and open enough to continue that world, and it's not like we've seen you know, loads of films set in that universe. But it's more Denis Villeneuve's involvement that has me excited. I feel like everything he's done so far, pretty much, I've at least really liked, if not loved. So I think that's the most exciting thing for me. And just visually, we only see a small section of it in, like, one specific kind of location in this teaser. But it looks great. So I'm super, super excited for that. It was good to see Harrison Ford back on screen. I mean, he seems to be just going through, reliving all his, like, past glories at the moment. Which, you know, isn't necessarily a bad thing. It was good in Star Wars, so hopefully he can pull it off here. I don't know. I mean, the teaser itself is, like you said, very much a teaser, which is rare and a good thing, but it doesn't really reveal anything in terms of plot, which I like, but it sort of also doesn't give me much to talk about here, because I don't know what to expect. I have no idea what this film is going to be about. Presumably about killing replicants, or replicants in some capacity. Though, interestingly, having recently rewatched the original, presumably the existence of this sequel disproves the theory that Harrison Ford is a replicant, right? Because he is now aged, and he's like an old man, and the whole thing about replicants having a 7-year life cycle, or whatever it is, or 4-year, whatever it is, a very short, specific life cycle in the first film, would seem to suggest that, you know, that he is not a replicant, which I prefer that reading of the first film, just... a little tangent there. But anyway, overall, John, super excited. I'm so curious to hear what you think and hear what we both have to say if we flash forward to our review, because, I sort of don't know what to expect, which is a great position to be in. That makes me sort of even more excited. What about you? Are you as excited as I am?
Yeah, I think so. I think pretty much... just to echo what you were saying, and in terms of this teaser, it does a great job of setting a bit of a tone and giving you a preview of some exciting visuals. but there's like maybe, this is probably an exaggeration, but maybe like 10 cuts in the whole trailer or something like that. You know, it really doesn't show much. It just gives you a taste. And I really like that. And as you said, like, we don't know anything about really what the story is going to be or how much Harrison Ford is in it. You know, is this the one scene that he's in and they're just plastering that on the marketing? But yeah, Denis Villeneuve is like one of the best new, in air quotes, directors working at the moment.
Definitely.
And he's just on like home run after home run after home run of films. So as you said, his involvement alone is enough to be really, really excited for this. And I think I would not have been as excited if Ridley Scott was directing it.
Especially given his recent track record. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's also returning to sort of his Wonder years. Not all the time, but certainly with Alien. And the results haven't been very good. He's sort of misunderstanding, I think, what made Alien so amazing. And I would worry that he would do the same here. So this is great to have him, I guess, on board as a producer so it can get bankrolled and have this huge budget seemingly because it just looks so nice. But without too much creative input, I guess. And it makes me think maybe that's what should have happened with the Alien films as well.
Yeah.
Give someone fresher a chance to interpret it, but you can sort of oversee it as this, you know, the person that helped create it. But, you know, that's a side note. I think, yeah, I mean, I can't predict too much. I really have no idea what to expect, but I've got pretty high expectations just in general. Given Villeneuve's involvement, I imagine this will be fairly... Have some strong thematic stuff and tie together nicely with story and character, and will obviously look amazing. So other than that, I don't really know what to say, but yeah, I'm pretty pumped.
Yeah, I think
to see this,
given his track record and like you said, his sort of tendency to make thematically interesting, sort of bit more cerebral films, this will at least be an intellectually interesting failure. Or intellectually interesting, unnecessary sequel. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that's the worst it could be. I think it's going to be interesting no matter what. I don't think he would be involved if there wasn't some... And it just lends itself. I mean, that's one of the things that makes the first film so great is the sort of play between humanity and robots. And I mean, you know, it's not necessarily the most original idea, but there's a richness to that I think suits Villeneuve's style, and it's like right in his wheelhouse, especially after something like Arrival that we had last year or the year before, whenever that came out.
Yeah, that's right. And I think it's definitely telling that this teaser isn't a gunfight or something like that, or a chase across a cityscape. It's Ryan Gosling looking kind of grizzled with his big trench coat, walking around, and then meeting Harrison Ford coming out of the darkness. So, yeah. Can you hear that?
Yeah, okay. What is that?
It's a hairdryer.
Oh, right.
So I just get ready. I mean, that's kind of it's it anyway.
Just like your replicants coming to life in the other
room. Yeah, they're powering up.
Do you think that ruined building is the Tyrell Corporation headquarters? It seems that sort of have the slopey... the walls that the original building did. I mean, it looks almost like a hotel lobby inside, so perhaps not, but... when he first stepped up to it, the first thing I thought of was that big sort of almost pyramid-like Tyrell Corp
structure. Could be, yeah.
That's kind of...
It will be interesting to see how much it references the original, actually. Whether it will be really slavish and... wink, wink, nudge, nudge in terms of locations and things, or just the same world that's, you know, 20 years later or whatever it is.
Yeah. So every time you, like, end your point, it's just like...
Yeah.
The only other thing I was going to say, I was pleasantly surprised by the music in this trailer. because I was a little bit worried, having rewatched the original recently, that it's I love that score, but it is so of the time. And I was a little bit worried that they would sort of replicate it in a maybe in too much of a sort of fanboy or too exactly, and it would date it, or it wouldn't fit, or something, or it would feel like it was milking that 80s nostalgia trip that everyone seems to be on at the moment. And I feel like at least from this tiny teaser, I mean, what we probably get like 10 seconds of it or something, but it feels like they've found a really good middle ground that makes it feel modernizes it, but still gives it that sort of like still weird synthy noir feel that the original one had. So that I think that also bodes well.
You're a cop. I had your job once. I was good at it.
I know.
What do you want?
I want to ask you some questions. The key to the future is finally unearthed. Bring it to me. They know you're here.
All right, John, we've now seen Blade Runner 2049. We're both pretty excited based on the small teaser that sort of didn't give us much of a clue of what the film itself was going to be like. So I'm curious what you thought of this new film, and because in preparation for this, we both rewatched the original Blade Runner. Perhaps if you could just give us a quick rundown of your thoughts and history with the original film, and then how the second one stacks up in comparison.
Yeah, sounds good. I did rewatch the first Blade Runner, maybe just a few days before seeing 2049, which was really good, and I'm glad that I did that because they're very strongly linked. And it was great rewatching the first one. I'd seen it maybe two times before when I was at uni. So that was a long time ago. And both those times, I kind of struggled with it, to be honest. Mm. I appreciated the look and everything, but for some reason, I found it hard to follow what was going on. And it didn't really sink its claws into me in terms of the thematic stuff. I think maybe I was just a bit too young to really understand it, even though I was probably old enough to know better. But, my mental development's probably slow, so it takes until I'm 30 to understand these sorts of things. So it was good. It was like I was watching it properly for the first time this time around. And I realized that actually it's quite simple in its narrative once you sort of get what's going on. I fell in love with the first one, rewatching it. The design is just incredible still. The story, while simple, hits on some really interesting, sci-fi thematic stuff about life and death, and what does it mean to know that you're going to die, and or to be human, and all that kind of stuff, which we all associate with Blade Runner.
Mm-hmm.
I was just sort of blown away by it again, I guess, or almost for the first time, really, which was really really good. Onto Blade Runner 2049. I freaking adore this movie, Matt. I think it's a masterpiece. Actually, it's as good as the first one, which is insane to say, but I'll stand by that. I think it's just as visually interesting, if not more, in its own way. I think it has its own set of thematic material that just builds upon the first one while offering it new ideas as well. I think the performances are great. Ryan Gosling is so awesome in this movie, even though he's kind of doing his whole thing of just having like three lines of dialogue and
yeah, a blank face, yeah.
A blank face, yeah, but looking cool. I mean, he does it so well. This score is really, really good in this. It's different. It's in general, this film is way more oppressive than the first one. I mean, the first one feels overcrowded, overpopulated, dirty and scungy. But I'd rather live in the world of that first one compared to where that world is now. I mean, it's way, way darker, way more oppressive. But it feels like a natural evolution of the first film at the same time. Harrison Ford delivers a really nice performance in this. I thought it was really good that he's only in like the last act. So it doesn't rely on him at all. I mean, he's like the Luke Skywalker that they're trying to get to. If we're sort of talking about new rebooty sort of things. But when they do get to him, he delivers a really strong performance. It's not nostalgia filled at all, which something like The Force Awakens was, even though I really liked that movie. The ending is quite powerful. I think there's a few nitpicks towards the end, but we can get into those later. But yeah, just to start with overall, I think it's incredible. And, you know, superficially, one of the best looking movies I've ever seen. It's like watching a Kubrick film, honestly. I was that blown away by it. I love Denis Villeneuve, or Denis. I don't know. We struggled over his last name now. I'm not sure how to pronounce the first name. He's great anyway, so, you know, he can't take offense. What are your overall thoughts, Matt, on this new Blade Runner?
Yeah, well, I guess I weirdly sort of had a similar reaction to you in terms of the original film. I sort of remember seeing it in uni as well and not connecting with it very much, but I'd subsequently watched it quite a few times, and sort of leading up to this, it was probably my 6th or 7th viewing, I reckon, because I had that big deluxe DVD release back in the day that had the 8 different cuts of it or whatever, so I did watch it quite a few times. And grew to love it. But interestingly, I would say initially, I think rewatching the first film was a bad idea for me so close to this new film, because I have subsequently now seen the new 2049 twice. But the first time I saw it, I really liked it, but I had issues with how it dealt with the world, or it just, I missed certain things. I still really liked the film the first time I watched it, but I missed the score was a big thing. And you're right, it is a great score and it feels very oppressive, but it has this sort of like metallic harshness to it that the first film doesn't. And on the first viewing, I missed the kind of like almost somber, melancholy, jazzy feel. And even the visuals had this kind of like smoke-filled noirness to them, that this new film has this kind of like crisp harshness that feels very different. And for some reason that didn't bother me, but I sort of missed it, and I wished I was sort of back in the original Blade Runner. Maybe that's just because I was so fond of that original film. And on first viewing, I also felt the length, like it felt too long, though on a weird side note, the cinema that I was in when I saw it for the first time was like 38 degrees. I've never been so hot in a cinema in my life.
Oh my God.
Like that may have like accentuated the feeling of like sitting in that hot room for a long time. And I also was just, this sort of goes to show how stupid I am in that I just couldn't look past plot mechanics, and I got so caught up and so worried that it was going to ruin the ambiguity of the first film, or I was second guessing it the whole time about, you know, the plot sort of structure of whether Ryan Gosling's character is the son or is not the son. And I was kind of hoping that it wouldn't go down there. I'm like, oh, you're smarter than this. You can't be telegraphing it. It must be not that. And then I wanted it to be ambiguous, and it wasn't ambiguous. It was very clear in one like sort of way. Anyway, so long story short, I guess I came out of it the first viewing really admiring it but not loving it. And then rewatched the original Blade Runner again, and then went back and watched 2049 for a second time. Mm. And on the second viewing, I would completely agree with what you said, and I would almost call it a masterpiece. I think it comes this close. I was able to let go of every issue that I had with it pretty much from the first film. It sort of accepted it as its own thing. I would, if I had to sort of, I don't think it's a perfect film. I do think it is a little long, and I think there's a simplistic beauty to the original film in that it is this kind of very simple story that just allows these really interesting, complex themes to sort of bubble up and never really addresses them. Whereas I think this film is perhaps a little bit too obsessed with being, attacking them head on. Like, the story is about whether he is the child or not. Whereas the first one's not about whether Deckard is a replicant, or it's not about if the robots are human or feel emotion. That is just sort of like a subtext that comes to the surface, which,
yeah, that's true.
I sort of missed in the second one. But other than that, holy shit, man, I totally agree with you. This has to be one of the most stunning films I've ever seen in my life. Like,
yeah.
What the fuck?
Seriously.
Oh, man.
It's such a feat.
And
it's incredible.
There's so many moments of sort of weird, haunting surrealism too that are sort of just bubble up out of the world that feel natural within the context of what's happening. Like the fight scene with Harrison Ford in the weird casino where there's this like jittering imagery and sounds, and
that's so good.
It's incredible. I've never seen anything like it before, but it's like, you know, it's almost on at surface level, if it didn't have any story or context, it feels like something out of like a Lynch film or something, you know what I mean? Like, it's just bizarre and weird and old-timey and creepy and scary and like abrasive, but it fits into this whole like greater picture of the world that he's built within this film. Man, it's just, it's amazing. Like, so good.
Yeah, my like jaw was on the floor from the whole film. It never lets up in this sort of creativity and, as I said, oppressiveness that it just, you know, bombasts you with. When I came out of it the first time, because I've seen it twice as well, I was just sort of, I was on that movie high, but like, because it's such a kind of dark, weird universe, I just felt weird after seeing the movie, but in a good way. Like, I really had to decompress and think about it. And the cinema that I saw it in as well had the volume cranked up to like 20. So, you know, it's quite a bassy, loud film. I felt like I'd been assaulted by the movie, but in a really good way. Every shot, like this is one of those movies where you could pause it at any moment and like frame that shot, you know, like it's just looks incredible. And that's Roger Deakins doing the cinematography, who is just like one of the best cinematographers ever, if not the best, I'll just say. Like, he's amazing. I sort of said this earlier, but what I really like is that it feels like an evolution of the world of the first movie. It's not exactly the same, but there's enough similarities that you can imagine, okay, this is 30 years later in the same universe, which is such a hard thing to do. The first one's so iconic, feels like such a real place. And they've done it again with this movie. I didn't feel the seams around the corner. I didn't feel like, oh, okay, some concept artist has tried too hard to make that look like a Blade Runner background or something like that. Like, it all feels very natural, very lived in, and very real, which I think is why I felt a bit icky and strange after the movie, because it's like peering into this alternate world, because the timeline obviously is, for the first one at least, is sort of now-ish, or a couple of years from now, and then this is like 30 years in the future. So it's like looking at an alternate sort of future/history, but it feels so tangible, and I just everything about it is so intelligently thought out. I just it's one of those things that you watch and go, like, how did they do this? How can anyone, even like a team of people, come up with something that's so cohesive And it looks great, but is also kind of creepy and unsettling.
And original. Like, everything looks like nothing I've seen before.
No, exactly. Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, it is an evolution of the first movie, so it's not like all the vehicles are the same or the tech's the same. But it also doesn't look like, I don't know, Star Wars or Star Trek or whatever. And then there's this whole subplot with his... digital lover and all that stuff. That's really interesting. And again, visually done so well with the weird kind of sex scene in the movie that goes on forever. But I love that.
It's great.
It's just so... So well done.
Yeah, I agree. Interestingly, the girlfriend in particular, that was another thing that on first viewing, not knowing how it played out for the majority of it, I quite disliked her because it felt like she was the surrogate for the cut voiceover in the first film. Like, she'd often allow him to like overtly explain what was happening in the case. And I do still feel like perhaps there's a little bit of that, and you could have like there's one scene in particular when he's sort of going through the DNA files and it's like, it just seems silly. Like, as if the cops had let an AI that sophisticated be like, projected in the middle of the room where he's like looking through classified
documents. Yeah, there's a few things like that in the movie.
I mean, that's nitpicky, but like, I just wish they'd sort of found a smarter way to convey some of that information. But having said that, I sort of knew where it was going on the second viewing, I appreciated that relationship a lot more. And sort of, like you said, the strange philosophical questions that arises, and just that moment, like, you know, when her death scene, which is actually quite an emotional moment, but the way, what I liked most was the way they sort of undercut that right at the end when he sees the giant billboard that sort of repeats those iconic things that she said to him, and he sort of realizes like how false, or like how it was all sort of some programmed love. Yep.
I love that moment. Yeah.
I mean, it's brutal, that is... but it's amazing. Emotionally,
and that's a huge turning point for his character, where you get some replay of dialogue about him. The most human thing you can do is die for something you believe in, or something like that, I believe. And that, you know, because he was holding on to this love that was completely fake and completely digital and not human, and so. What does he have after that? At that point, he's got nothing except this choice to help make a difference by sacrificing himself.
Yeah. So,
it works really well.
Also, I mean, on a similar note, because I was so caught up in the plot and sort of second guessing what Ryan Gosling's character was doing and thinking and going to end up being, that sort of plot twist didn't have any impact on me in the first viewing when you find out that he's not the son. And then when he died at the end, that sort of didn't have any emotional impact on me either. And I felt like that it just didn't have the sophistication or the impact of the original film with Rutger Hauer's death scene. But then in the subsequent viewing, when I sort of allowed myself to go on the journey with Ryan Gosling's character, even though I knew what was going to go on, what was going to happen, I was, you know, sort of able to experience it as he would be seeing it. And that was much more affecting. And at the end, I didn't tear up, but I at least felt some, like, actual sadness at his death. Like, that, I think it works quite well, even if it's not as, like, perfect as the ending of that first film.
Yeah, I agree. Like, yeah, the ending of the first film is so good, so powerful. That speech that he gives in the rain and stuff is just so, so beautifully done. And then after that, you've got this sort of ambiguity of Deckett and all that sort of thing, which is great. But what I liked about this movie is it's kind of the opposite of the first one in terms of the main characters, which is... In this movie, you start knowing that he's an android.
Yeah, I thought that as well.
And then he could be real. And obviously, it's the inverse of the first movie, where you think he's human, but maybe he's not. I really enjoy that smart way of mirror imaging.
Yeah.
Yeah. On that note of Deckard, it sort of still leaves the door open on what he is. I mean, they never definitively... They sort of purposely, actually, still muddy the waters to keep that that sort of ambiguity alive, which I thought was really cool. I don't quite know how, what I think. I think probably I'm more inclined to believe the boring answer, which is that he's just a man.
Yeah, that's how I read it as well.
But I'm not sure.
I think that's actually more interesting in a lot of ways. Like, especially in terms of the first film, when the way that in the first film the replicants are display more humanity than the humans. Like, he is more cold and distant, whereas the replicants are the, like, I feel like that's like a really interesting dichotomy. Whereas if, and plus I think just it doesn't quite make that much sense if he's a replicant. Like, this, the logistics of it. Like, why isn't he super strong like the others? Like, why, you know, why have the cops got this amazing new model that has the memories and the extended lifespan? Like, it's a bit of a stretch. Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, that's...
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Pedantic. But, yeah, anyway, I prefer the reading that he's human. But, yeah, in the new film, I was quite impressed with the way they... I mean, they do it very overtly, sort of give you two clear options, but when Jared Leto sort of says, didn't you even think that you were programmed to meet her to be the one that would produce the child? Or, like, was it sort of the programming of fate and love that you were meant to do it? I like that. Interestingly, that moment as well, when I liked it the first time, when you sort of, when they introduced the new version of Rachel, man, that fucking CG is good. Like, the first time when she walked out of that darkness, I thought, have they found just someone and done her up so she looks like exactly, it's not until she sort of starts that she, like, frowns or something, or something happens with her mouth.
Yeah,
and
she has a couple of lines.
You can see, you can sort of tell that she's digital.
Mm.
But then there's that line where Deckard says, she had green eyes, and then that's kind of like him not accepting her as Rachel, and then the hench woman shoots her in the head. Which I liked a lot the first viewing, but then after I saw it the first time, then I rewatched Blade Runner again, I paid like very specific attention to Rachel, and she doesn't have green eyes, she has brown eyes, right? Which makes me love that scene. Like, I had a huge discussion with my girlfriend after, like, what that means.
How intentional.
Well, I think it's 100% intentional, and whether you sort of read that as, because Jared Leto has a speech about how he's been, like, hanging on to the memories of her and, like, the shine of her lips or something, like, the specific details of her. And, like, whether... I like the notion that this memory that he's been holding on to this whole time is wrong. You know what I mean? Like, there's some... Mm. I mean, that's kind of a sad reading of it, but there's a truth to that as well. Like, you don't remember things perfectly. Exactly. Yeah,
exactly.
You gloss... Your memories are often much better than the reality of what the situation is worth. I mean, I guess you could also...
And so much of the movie is about memory, too. And what we remember is real and what isn't. So that sort of fits in with that as well. I didn't pick up on that at all. That's really cool.
Yeah, I really like it. It made me like it a lot more. Weirdly, Jared Leto's character in general, I really liked. And that
same.
When he's sort of introduced and he seems to be this sort of weird middle ground between human and machine, like he has his part machine in a way and has these weird floaty eyes that sort of see for him. I like that amalgamation.
Yeah. They were really creepy, those eyes. That scene where you sort of see the birth a new replicant is chilling stuff.
Yeah.
Really cold, really removed. The way she just sort of thrown onto the floor. And then when he realizes that she can't reproduce, just, you know, slits open her stomach. It's like really, really disturbing imagery. And of course, everywhere he is in his corporation, everything's so angular, but at the same time, it's got these water reflections everywhere. And, which goes back to the awesome sort of lighting and design of everything. It's just, really effective.
And I like that there's kind of no resolution to his character. He's barely in it. He has like two scenes or something. There's something bold about that. Like, you know, they set him up kind of as the big villain and then it's kind of nothing happens with him, you know?
Yeah. It's the legacy, obviously, now of these Blade Runner things is to be fantastic critically acclaimed movies that don't immediately connect with a sort of general audience and take their time to sort of sink in. So if they do make another one, I don't think it will be for a while.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It is. I feel like it's kind of some sort of weird minor miracle that he even got to make this. Like, the budget must have absolutely been enormous. I don't know what the figure is, but I mean, just him in general, he has a... Villeneuve has a way with CGI that is just jaw-dropping. Like, in Arrival, it was the same sort of thing. Like, it's so crisp and feels part of the world. And
absolutely.
It's, yeah, it's incredible that they gave him the money and the resources to make something this weird and sort of... Yeah, off-putting is the wrong word, but like you said, it's like oppressive, and it's not a nice, fun film to watch. It's slow.
Not at all.
Doesn't resolve half of the plot points. It's depressing, you know. Like,
yeah, I think there's maybe three jokes in the whole movie. Yeah. You know, it's not light at all. It's constantly sort of ponderous and dark. But I love that. And yeah, we should be, you know, thanking the movie gods that this exists. Yeah. This is exactly, you know, the sort of movie that we always kind of pine for on the podcast.
Exactly, which is right.
Big, thoughtful, you know, has enough of a budget to create a full world without dumbing down anything. So, yeah, I'm just so glad it's around, and I can't wait to see it again. And I want to, you know, listen to the score and sort of keep diving into it. It's awesome.
Yeah, same. What were your nitpicks? If you said there was a few things, given that we've been like gushing over it and calling it a minor masterpiece, perhaps we should discuss.
Yeah. So the scene where he realizes that he's not the kid, and he's sort of with the resistance or whatever you want to call them. I didn't like the way that they all come out of the darkness as a team, and it's like there's going to be an uprising and all this stuff. It felt a little cheap, and I don't know, if it kind of reminded me of like the Matrix sequels or something like that. It felt like the movie's not about that to me. I don't really care about this war that's going to happen between... I mean, that adds texture to the world, but just something about that particular scene felt out of place to me. I'd rather if it, like the rest of the movie, it was maybe just two or three people in a room talking about it, and that's how he finds out the news. Not like, yes, we're the team of replicants and we're going to fight back. And yeah, I don't know. For whatever reason, personally, that didn't sit well with me. And the other thing is, I don't know why they bother to keep him alive. You know, they capture Harrison Ford, the henchwoman. I can't remember her name. She captures Harrison Ford, beats the shit out of Ryan Gosling, kills his CG girlfriend, and then flies away and just leaves him there.
Right. It's a good point. I hadn't thought of that, actually.
It is so in her character to, like, pull his head off. That, like, gives him a chance to meet the resistance or whatever they're called to come up with a plan to save Harrison Ford and to kill her. It just felt a little strange to me. The movie's so smart and everyone acts in it so logically that felt out of place to me. But that, I think they're the main things that come to mind for me.
That's true. I mean, I guess maybe are they still hoping that he will lead them to the child in some way? I don't know. I mean, that's the only...
I'm not sure. Yeah,
I don't know, I guess they've got Harrison Ford at that point. Like, that's kind of what they're going to use him for. But
yeah,
I mean, you're right. Either kill him or bring him in. Although, I don't know. But I hadn't thought of that.
Did you have any other sort of nitpicks before we...
No, I don't think so. The only... mine were more vague structural things, like I said before, about just the sense that it's... tries a little bit too hard to be about its themes instead of letting the themes come naturally to the surface.
I think that's a good point.
And it is long. I mean, even the second time I didn't feel it as much just because I loved being in it. But I mean, what, it's like almost 3 hours, right? 2 hours and 50 minutes or something.
Yeah, something like that.
And maybe that's also just me missing the sort of conciseness of the first film, because I think that's even under 2 hours, isn't it? At least the final cut is, I think, like an hour and 50 minutes or something.
Yeah, it's not overly long, definitely.
Yeah. But no, other than that, I think, some of the girlfriend stuff I mentioned before as well, but other than that, it's pretty good, I think. Like, it's pretty smart, most of the things that it does.
Yeah. It's pretty tight overall.
Yeah.
It does that thing that all good sort of sci-fi and fantasy does, which is, we'll probably cut this out, but I love seeing how things work and getting glimpses at how the world operates. And it's just so fascinating. Like, the first time that you see his hologram girlfriend, or when he's like in the outdoor kind of food courts, or wrong word, but whatever. And there's like people like all those screens, and they just like touch their hand up to each one, and it comes out of the dispenser, and, his baseline test, and, when he kills the replicant at the start and like has to scan the eyeball on the little scanner in his car, and he has to like wipe it.
Yeah.
Because I just love stuff like that. Yeah. It just makes everything feel so real.
That's so true. I agree. I'm glad you mentioned that baseline test. It's like the new Voight comp. I loved it.
Yeah.
Man. Like oppressive repetition being like booming out at him, and the weird way he just like coldly repeats certain words back. Like, it was so weird but so cool, and the visuals of that like weird white sort of camera eye thing, and the like it was just brilliant. Like, it wasn't some cheap just flashy version of the Voight comp test or something, you know what I mean? Like, it was such a unique evolution of that, and it makes sense within the world. Like, the logic of it, once you sort of, it doesn't explain it to you either. That's a good example of it not over explaining things. You just kind of have to figure out what the fuck that test is for. But once you sort of do, it kind of makes sense. You can see what they were going for. Like, I loved it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Pre-Post Film Review. We'd love to hear what you guys thought about Blade Runner 2049. Did you find it as interesting as me and Matt? Did you hate it? What are your thoughts on the original Blade Runner? We'd like to know. Are you human? Do you think you're human? Tell us your childhood memories, and we'll reply and tell you whether you're a replicant or not.
Yeah, reply with a picture of a unicorn or...
Or a wooden horse. You can email us at prepostfilmreview@gmail.com, and we'll definitely get back to you if you send an email there, so that'd be great.
Yep, it would be. You can also find us on Facebook. You can get in contact with us there. We're also on Twitter at prepostfr. We sort of post news stories and new episodes and things over there, so come on over and check us out. The most important thing, however, is to subscribe. If you could subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're using to listen to this right now, we're on iTunes and Stitcher and all the major platforms. And if you like the show, leave a review. That would be cool. We'd appreciate that too.
That's right. You can also find us on Letterboxd, letterboxd.com, or on the Letterboxd app. There's links in the show notes, and that's a good way to keep in touch with other films that we've been seeing, and maybe start your own little film diary. Give us a follow there if you want. And we'd love it if you all joined us next episode. We're going to be talking about the new Marvel movie, which is not something we normally do, but because there's an interesting director attached this time around, we're going to be... And that's the new Thor movie, Thor Ragnarok. So I'm actually kind of excited.
Yeah,
to
I think
see
this
that
could
just
be good.
Because of Taika Waititi's involvement.
Definitely, he hasn't made a bad film yet. So, yeah.
It looks funny. Yeah. It does look genuinely funny.
I agree.
So that's cool.
Damn, did I fall over myself.
2049. What? That doesn't make any sense.
So weird, I love it. I think it's my beard dandruff.
Oh, yeah.